Good morning, everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our program is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the Age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers who work in many fields and teach us the art of living, how to work in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace, and use the technological advances available to us. Approximately every 2,500 years, a new teacher brings a body of teaching to humanity that is suited to our needs at that particular time. Usually this takes place at the end of an age. Right now, as the age of Pisces declines and our solar system aligns with the constellation Aquarius, new energies are beginning to make themselves felt. As these Aquarian energies of sharing and justice stream into our planet, the need for change can be seen more clearly. A period of chaos ensues as the old order lessens its grip on humanity, and the impulse of sharing, justice and peace inspires us to move forward in evolution as a united group.
Good morning, everyone, and we trust you as well as can be, and welcome to the Friday Maitreya program. As always, lovely to have you with us. Now, we're starting with an article by Sebastian Villemot, and it's entitled The Principles of Economic Sharing, and he is a Paris-based economist. Sharing is the key to solving the problems that confront humanity today. Only through sharing can economic justice be achieved. Lingering injustice will feed divisions, tensions, possibly even war. But what exactly do we mean by economic justice? What are the concrete principles that should govern the sharing of resources?
One possible way of envisioning economic justice is through the implementation of what may be called the, quote, principle of fair compensation, unquote. It corresponds to the idea that within the great collective economic endeavour, everyone should receive a share commensurate to their contribution to the whole. This principle is inscribed in the French Declaration of the Rights of Man and of the Citizen of 1789, which states in its first article that social distinctions should be founded only on the common good. It is the very opposite of exploitation, which corresponds to a situation where some get less than what they contribute because others in a position of power unduly appropriate the fruits of their efforts.
Even though there is nowadays a wide consensus about the desirability of this principle, there is nevertheless disagreement over its concrete meaning. More precisely, the question is, by which standard should one's individual contribution be measured? The dominant view, especially among economists, is that what matters is one's productivity, that is, one's ability to create economic value. From that perspective, it is fair that a visionary business entrepreneur receives more than, say, a sales clerk, since the former contributes more to GDP than the latter. Because economic valuations are mainly driven by market forces in the current system, this vision tends to be conservative. It will consider as fair any inequality stemming from open competition on free markets.
One could argue, however, that market values are distorted in the sense that they do not faithfully reflect the social usefulness of activities. Interestingly, the lockdowns in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic have highlighted the reality that some jobs, for example in the food and care sectors, are of vital importance, despite being of relatively low value from a narrow economic point of view, since they are poorly rewarded. Consequently, another interpretation of the principle of fair compensation is that one should see according to one's social usefulness, i.e. according to one's ability to create use value rather than market value.
But even that latter view can be criticised on the grounds that some are born more talented than others, and that rewarding talent is unfair, since it is not the result of one's individual actions and decisions. A very gifted person will be able to contribute more to the common good than an average person. But does that justify a difference in income if both have worked as hard over the course of their life? Hence, the third and most egalitarian interpretation of the principle of fair compensation is that resources should be distributed according to effort, the latter being defined as the personal sacrifice or inconvenience incurred in performing one's economic duties. Despite their important differences, these three variants of the principle of fair compensation all provide a criterion for determining how just is a given economic system, the one in which we live, or another historical or hypothetical one.
If a system is thus deemed unfair, the logical implication is that it should be transformed so as to achieve a distribution of resources closer to the fairness principle. This redistribution can be considered as an act of sharing. However, is sharing only a way of ensuring that everyone receives in proportion to their contribution? In its essence, this rule is fundamentally one of individual responsibility in the sense that one's fate ought to be strictly determined by one's own individual actions. Doesn't sharing actually mean more than that, though? Isn't sharing also about our collective responsibility towards each other? Another way of conceiving sharing is through what may be called the principle of need. It corresponds to the idea that everyone should receive according to their needs.
This implies that all the universal basic necessities should be granted to everyone: food, housing, healthcare, education, clothing, transportation, internet. This also includes needs that are less universal and that can vary from individual to individual, either because of disabilities or life accidents that should be compensated for, or because of inclinations or special abilities that require some investment to be fully developed and realized. The principle was enshrined in Article 22 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights of 1948. Everyone, as a member of society, has the right to social security, as entitled to realization through national effort and international cooperation, and in accordance with the organization and resources of each state, of the economic, social, and cultural rights indispensable for his dignity and the free development of his personality.
Under this principle, what justifies individual income is the simple fact of sharing the same common humanity. This is brotherhood in practice, stemming from the awareness that humanity as a whole is responsible for the well-being of all its constituent parts. Undoubtedly, this principle of need is a higher and more perfect expression of the idea of sharing than is the principle of fair compensation. Thanks to the tremendous scientific, technical, and organizational advances of the last two centuries, on aggregate, we now produce much more than what is required to cover the basic needs of all humanity, and the principle of need has thus become a realistic objective. Another reason why the emphasis should today be put on needs is the economic crisis. It is clear that, at least in affluent countries, we have to collectively rethink our consummation patterns by drawing the line between what is really needed for purposeful living and what is superfluous and should be disregarded. This indicates a broader role for the principle of need, which not only defines a minimum level of consumption of some goods and services, but also sets a maximum on some others.
While the principles of fair compensation and of need both appear desirable, it is important to realize that there is some degree of tension between the two. The former says that there should be as faithful a connection as possible between what one gets and what one contributes, while the latter, on the contrary, justifies a disconnect in various cases. This means that until most of our needs can be provided for by robots, some balance must be achieved between the two. A situation where everyone would have their needs fulfilled, but where only some would perform the socially necessary work, would be deemed as unjust and would not be politically sustainable. At our current stage of development, the desirable system is thus one in which working for the community remains the social norm and gets duly rewarded, but within the constraints of the principle of need, in brackets, in both its minimum and maximum dimensions.
So how does our current economic system measure to the standard? Indisputably, it blatantly violates the principle of need. Hundreds of millions do not have enough food to eat, not to speak of other basic needs, while tons of objects of questionable usefulness are produced every day. The system does not even fulfil conservative interpretations of the principle of fair compensation. The heart of the intellectual endeavour of Karl Marx was precisely to show that capital owners, because of their position of power, are able to seize a value that has been produced by others. More recently, feminists have highlighted the fact that women are paid less than men for identical skills and job contents, not to speak of unpaid domestic work. In the field of international relations, the dependency theory pioneered by economists Paul Prebisch and Hans Singer has shown how poor countries are subject to an unequal exchange in their trade with wealthier ones.
A significant transformation of our economic system is thus in order if we are to realise the principle of sharing. What does this imply for our policies and institutions? First, the principle of need must be implemented so as to become an effective reality for all human beings. Fortunately, we're not starting from scratch. In several countries, there already exists institutions that are directly inspired by this principle. One is Social Security, whose precise form varies across countries, but which typically provides monetary transfers to ensure that needs remain covered in various life situations, such as illness, unemployment, retirement, disability, parenthood. The other one consists of public services, which provide free or cheap access to various essential services, and these are education, transportation, infrastructure, and physical safety.
These schemes, which are currently under attack through austerity, should on the contrary be strengthened, expanded to cover more needs, food and housing being the obvious candidates, and be extended to all countries. They could also be complemented by a universal basic income. Secondly, while the principle of need should be given precedence, a balance has to be achieved with the principle of fair compensation as indicated above. In practice, this means that everyone should be given the opportunity to make a meaningful contribution to the common good and be rewarded for doing so. This could be achieved through a job guarantee program, which would ensure that no one is left involuntarily unemployed, while at the same time channeling vast amounts of creative energy into the social life of local communities and into the restoration of our environment.
Another important issue relates to unpleasant or painful jobs. Our collective well-being is highly dependent on such jobs, which cannot as yet be fully automatized. Today, those tasks are often performed by workers for whom it is the only way to survive. But in a world where all basic needs are satisfied and where unemployment has virtually disappeared, who will be willing to take them on? Will the satisfaction of being useful to the community be enough to offset the low wage and the hardship? A significant rethinking of the productive sphere is thus called for. Workers need to have more power and control over their work conditions. And according to the principle of compensation, based on effort or sacrifice, those painful jobs should be rewarded with much more than they currently are, maybe even more than creative and intellectual jobs, which would imply a complete reversal of the prevailing wage hierarchy.
And thirdly, those principles should not only rule the relations between individuals, but also between nations. Much remains to be accomplished in that area, since many countries are not yet able to fully cover the needs of their own population. The existing official development assistance flows, though theoretically grounded in sharing principles, remain largely insufficient and ineffective in practice. A much more ambitious aid program under the supervision of the United Nations is urgently required. But however necessary they may be in the short term, such one-way assistance relationships are neither desirable nor sustainable in the long term because they reflect unequal power status.
The goal should be for countries in the global south to strengthen their domestic economies and reach a measure of self-sufficiency and better terms of trade. This in particular requires a transformation of the rules of international trade and investment flows so as to put an end to unequal exchange and predation by multinational firms. Oh, and to take a note that a higher wage rate need not translate into a higher income. It can also lead to fewer working hours for the same income, which makes sense for unpleasant jobs.
And we're going to talk a little bit about the universal basic income. Sebastian Villamot says, since the UBI is not targeted and non-specific, it cannot replace Social Security. For example, it cannot compensate for disability nor pay for the cost of a long stay in hospital. Also, the fact that it may accrue to well-off people is in direct contradiction with the principle of need. Following on with that, Linnell is going to speak about a universal basic income, because the UN is calling for a temporary basic income for the world's poorest 2.7 people. And this is from the Share International issue of September.
Demanding unprecedented social and economic measures to cope with unprecedented times, the United Nations Development Programme called for a temporary basic income, that is TBI, for 2.7 billion people living at or below the poverty line in more than 130 countries. A temporary guaranteed income for the world's poorest people would significantly help developing countries to mitigate the spread of the coronavirus by allowing families to stay at home, the UNDP said in a report released recently.
The measure would cost $199 billion per month, I guess that's American dollars, just 12% of the total financial response to the COVID-19 pandemic, and the equivalent of one-third of what developing countries owe in external debt payments in 2020. The UNDP indicates that the basic income can be paid for in its entirety by reappropriating scheduled payments on external debts, economist anthropologist Jason Heckel tweeted. The case for implementing this proposal is unimpeachable and for world leaders should proceed immediately.
TBI would give poor families around the world the means to buy food and pay for health and education expenses, the UNDP said in its report. In developing countries where case numbers have risen in recent weeks, including Ethiopia, the Central African Republic and Zimbabwe, 7 in 10 workers earn their living in informal markets and have little access to government welfare programs. Many of the most vulnerable people who would be helped by a TBI are women, young people, refugees, and people living with disabilities. The TBI proposal offers realistic and practical pathways for developing countries to create or top up social protection, the program tweeted.
The UNDP proposal, either adding to existing average incomes, implementing lump sum transfers linked to differences in living standards across a country, or using uniform lump sum transfers to all residents of developing countries. The measure is feasible and urgently needed, with the pandemic now spreading at a rate of more than 1.5 million new cases per week, particularly in developing countries, said a statement. The proposal mirrors measures that have already been taken in some countries, including Togo and West Africa. The federal government distributed nearly $20 million in monthly aid to more than 12% of the population after the pandemic began there. And Spain will increase the monthly incomes of 2.3 million people following the recent passage of its monthly budget.
And thank you very much for listening to us today, and that's all we have time for. If you'd like, please visit our website, share-international.org, or you may email us at sharenz@yahoo.com. Thank you again. Love and blessings to all.